We're also running legal different businesses.
Good morning and welcome to the Thursday, March 5th, 2026 meeting of the Minnesota House Commerce and Finance and Policy Committee. I call the meeting to order. There is a quorum present. Our first order of business is the approval of the minutes. Representative Davids, have you had a chance to review the minutes from yesterday's meeting?
I have, and I move the minutes.
Representative Davids moves the approval of the minutes from the Commerce Committee hearing on March 4th. Any questions, additions, deletions to those minutes? Seeing none and hearing none, all those in favor of approval of minutes signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. The next order of business on our agenda is House File 400, and that is being carried by one of our vice chairs, Representative Perryman, as she makes her way to the testifying table. Disposition of this bill today is to do a hear and lay over, just to do some backgrounding on House File 400, and I will bring it before the committee to lay over for possible future consideration or inclusion. In the state of Minnesota, when the legislature approves additional mandates that go to health insurance policies where it applies, that drives the cost of premiums. This bill is a what's known as a defrayal bill, which means that if the state of Minnesota is so inclined to include additional mandatory coverages, the state of Minnesota will pay for those additional mandatory coverages because the state would feel that those are important coverages, important enough for the state to pay for those coverages instead of driving up insurance premiums and making the cost of overall insurance less affordable for more Minnesotans. And so with that, Representative Perryman, welcome to the committee. We'll go ahead and have you begin with your opening comments this morning. Proceed when you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. We are here again. Back in February of 2025, I presented this bill, HF 400, and since then we've gotten a few more authors onto the bill, making it bipartisan, and today I bring it back respectfully to you and our committee to consider the layover again, I guess, here. But let's start. Healthcare costs remain one of the top concerns for Minnesota employers and working families. Businesses across the state are working hard to continue offering coverage, but they are increasingly feeling pressure from rising premiums. As costs continue to rise, we need to find reasonable approaches to help relieve cost burdens on employers and employees, and that includes families as well. We know healthcare costs are driven by many variables. HF 400 addresses one area squarely within the legislator's control, the creation of new benefit mandates. Minnesota currently has the second highest number of state-required mandates in the fully insured market. Many were enacted for important reasons, but each new mandate increases premiums for employers and employees. HF 400 does not prohibit the legislature from adopting additional mandates. Instead, it provides that if we choose to enact a new mandate, the state will cover the share of costs that would otherwise be shifted directly onto premium payers. Importantly, the bill has minimal fiscal impact unless the legislature decides to add new mandates in the future. This proposal promotes transparency and shared responsibility while helping protect affordability for Minnesota businesses and employees. I respectfully ask for your support. And with that, Chair O'Driscoll, I believe we have some testifiers that will also speak to the bill.
Thank you, Representative Perryman. There are no amendments to the bill, so we'll take the bill as introduced and presented to the committee. Our first testifier today is Jonathan Cotter from the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Mr. Cotter, welcome to the committee. So state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony. Again, welcome.
Thank you, Chair O'Driscoll, Chair Cagle, and members of the committee. My name is Jonathan Cotter, Director of Healthcare and Commerce Policy with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Health insurance is an incredibly important benefit in this increasingly competitive labor market. It allows employers to attract and retain talent and helps ensure their employees stay healthy and productive at work. About 70% of our members provide health insurance to their employees. Three quarters of them do so through the state's state-regulated, fully insured market. This allows these mostly small and mid-sized businesses to provide coverage to their employees without having to take on the financial risk of a self-insured, self-funded plan. But it also comes with the second longest list of benefit mandates in the country. These mandates are often well-intentioned pieces of legislation looking to improve the lives of those who would benefit from the mandate. But these mandates come with a cost. In 2022, a bipartisan effort resulted in the mandate review process, which requires the Department of Commerce to conduct a cost-benefit analysis. And consistently, these reports have confirmed that there are costs associated with these mandates that are passed on to premium payers. This is concerning because we know healthcare affordability is not getting easier for employees or their employers. Roughly three-quarters of our members who currently offer health insurance tell us that they'll be forced to make significant changes to their offerings, including reductions in coverage and dropping coverage altogether, if costs continue to rise at their current rate. Some have already had to make those hard decisions. One in five chamber members who don't currently offer health insurance tell us because prohibitive costs increases force them to drop the coverage that they had. Fortunately, House File 400 addresses one of the components of rising health insurance costs. Many aspects of the cost of care and cost of insurance are outside the direct control of this legislature, but only this legislature can continue to add mandates on the fully insured market. So when policymakers decide that there is a public health imperative for additional benefits, House File 400 offers the state the opportunity to invest in the health of those seeking them, while also ensuring that costs for those who rely on coverage in the state's fully insured market don't increase as a result. For that reason, we thank Representatives Perryman, Hewitt, Dotseth, Norris, and Myers for their support of House File 400, and we thank the committee for its consideration today.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Cotter. We'll have you hang around in case there are questions later on when we get to the committee discussion. And with that, our next testifier on House File 400 is Mr. Dan Andreessen from the Government Affairs Director for the Minnesota Council of Health Plans. Mr. Andreessen, welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Dan Andreessen with the Minnesota Council of Health Plans, representing Minnesota's nonprofit insurers. When the legislature enacts a coverage mandate to commercial insurance, it primarily applies to the fully insured market, which is around 17% of the population. New mandates do not apply to the employer market and the ERISA plans. This market has an affordability challenge exacerbated by increased health care costs, higher utilization, and the sunsetting of federal enhanced premium tax credits. Within the fully insured market, premiums this year have increased significantly, both in the individual and small group plans. We understand the reason for a new mandate is to help someone struggling with a medical condition. It is also true that the providers and the drug companies who perform the services that are within those mandate bills expect to be paid to deliver that care. When the legislature enacts a coverage mandate, you're telling a health plan you must now pay for services that you had not done previously. And doing so means insurers will need to collect more premium to pay for those new services, increase cost sharing, or both. For the past few sessions, we've seen a significant increase in coverage mandates. 20 mandates have been enacted since 2014. 13 of those were passed in 2023 and 2024. So far this biennium, 26 new mandate bills have been introduced. House File 400 is a way to mitigate premium increases if a new mandate adds cost. This would be accomplished by using the existing defrayal process through the Department of Commerce. Currently, for mandates eligible for defrayal under the ACA, health plans submit receipts to verified paid claims from the previous calendar year. Once approved by Commerce, health plans are reimbursed for those costs the year after the claims were paid to the provider. Knowing this reimbursement is coming will allow plans to remove these costs from our premium rates. Defrayal would only occur if a mandate is enacted and results in new costs from a paid claim. House File 400 is a win-win solution that maintains the legislature's ability to enact new mandates while managing premium impacts in the fully insured market. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Andreessen, for your testimony. That concludes all of those who have pre-registered for testimony. Is there anyone in the audience who'd like to testify on the matter before the committee, House File 400, dealing with mandatory insurance, health insurance deferrals? Anyone wishing to testify? Seeing none and hearing none, members, are there any questions on House File 400? Representative Co-Chair Cagle.
Thank you. I would ask if Mr. Anderson could come back up.
Representative Cagle, I'm sorry.
Oh, I have a question for Mr. Anderson.
Okay. Thank you.
So I was just wondering if you could kind of give me what the cost breakdown is of genetic testing, preventative care after a positive test versus like treating stage four cancer, and especially like if there's any kind of specialty cancer treatment.
Mr. Andreessen.
Mr. Chair, Chair Cagle, if I'm understanding correct, are you asking the cost difference between before or after?
Well, what I'm saying is...
Representative Cagle. Oh,
thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry. what I'm saying is it seems cheaper to treat people on the front end, and I'm assuming that it's also less expensive to insure healthy people. And so I'm just kind of curious about if you ever look at these decisions as returns on your investment, because we know if you can get genetic screening, then you can take measures that would prevent you from ever developing a cancer in the long run. And so I'm just kind of trying to figure out, like, you know, if these decisions are ever made in a longer term projection.
Mr. Andreessen.
Mr. Chair, Co-Chair Cagle. Yes, we do. I think there's kind of a little bit of a challenge here in that there are parts such as vaccinations, preventative care that are all covered with no cost, because the more that we can push someone towards that and keeping them healthy, that's the best way to mitigate cost, is to keep someone healthy, and it's better for them in the long run anyway. When it comes to the rate setting process, all the plans are allowed to do is look at the trend of healthcare costs or spending for that given service. You know, they look back, you know, 3 years and what is the trend, and this is what we need to put out for rates in order to cover those costs. We can't speculate into the future that this is what's going to change. You know, things happen, and that's just kind of the rate setting process. So I understand that that can cause challenge when we're looking at things and we say, well, this is going to change things for the better in the future. But the way that the insurance process is working and the rate setting process is that's what we have to work with.
Representative Cagle, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's unfortunate. You know, is there a reason that is that statutory, or is that a policy from the plans?
Mr. Andrews.
Mr. Chair, Co-Chair Cagle, there are language and statute. I don't have it in front of me exactly, but there are requirements where plans have to, that you can only rate on someone's age, geographic area, so where they live, and then their smoking status. But the whole rate setting process is set through by, you know, overseen by the Department of Commerce for fully insured market products. So this is just, it isn't just this line of insurance that does this, but all lines of insurance.
Co-Chair Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
No further questions?
Not yet.
Okay. Vice Chair Elkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I see Assistant Commissioner Dreyer in the audience, and I've got some questions that she might be best answered. What I'd like to know is, or of the hearing committee here, is what types of plans do these mandates actually apply to, and which types of plans there are exempt from the mandates that we pass?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Elkins. Representative Elkins, we'll see if the department wants to speak. They did not testify, but we'll see if Ms. Dreyer would like to come up and speak to the matter from the department this morning. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning,
did you want Vice Chair Elkins to repeat the question, or did you hear it?
Sure. Good morning. For the record, Deputy Commissioner of Commerce, Julia Dreyer. So you had a question in terms of what
Representative Elk. Representative Elk, go ahead and repeat the question, if you would.
The defrayal.
When we, I'll repeat the question. So when we pass a mandate, what types of plans does it apply to, and which ones are exempt? Which types of plans are exempt from the mandates?
Sure. Chair Driscoll, Representative Elkins. So in general, unless there's something specific written into the legislation, the rules apply to the individual market, the small group market, and then the fully insured large group market.
Representative Elkins.
Yeah, so the point is that when we pass a mandate, it actually applies to a relatively small part of the market. The vast majority of the market, including the self-insured ERISA market, Medicare, aren't affected by it. And then beyond that, the other thing that I've observed, so I was the author of the bill that requires the mandate review process in 2020. And since then, I've put, a couple of my own bills through the process because I wanted to know what the impact would be. And a significant percentage of the time, the answer comes back, well, according to federal law, this isn't considered a mandate. And so I don't get any numbers. And the other thing that I think that I'm observing, having watched this for a number of years now, is that it seems like the parts of the market that are our mandates are applicable to seem to be further shrinking, and there seems to be a trend of small businesses leaving the fully insured market and moving into self-insured ERISA type plans and taking on more risk than they probably should, and citing the the increase of the cost of fully insured individual small group coverage as part of their decision. So I'm glad that Representative Perryman has brought this bill forward, and I'm glad that we're laying it over, because I think there are a lot of complicated issues here where there are kind of interplays that we really need to consider carefully on this one. But I'm glad we're raising the subject.
Thank you, Representative Elkins. And I guess I do want to follow up a little bit on the conversation that was started by Representative Elkins. Deputy Commissioner, can you tell us of the plans that these mandates apply to? When you do premium reviews and look at things, are these on the more affordable end of the spectrum for individuals when they're purchasing insurance, or are they on the more expensive end as far as premiums are concerned and where deductibles come into play? Because a lot of times you'll hear from members of the legislature and others, well, if you have a $10,000 deductible on your insurance policy, do you really have insurance at all? And so I'm just wondering if you could give us some insight as to the type of policies, maybe put a face on the name of the policy as to who might purchase that and who may be subject to those mandates, and how that might affect their premiums from where they are right now versus the general market under ERISA or self-insured plan where they may get it to an employer or other eligible group.
So, Chair Driscoll, so what I hear you asking is, which types of entities or people are buying or purchasing these plans that the mandates apply to?
Correct.
On the individual market, that would be individuals who are having to buy insurance on their own, generally because they don't have access to either a government program or because they don't have access to employer-sponsored insurance or a ERISA plan. So those tend to be small business owners, early retirees, gig workers, those sorts of individuals. And then small businesses would apply to a business that is generally under 50 employees or covered lives.
Not to jump bills on the agenda, but I do have a bill that's coming up that talks about reinsurance, and that's something that the legislature has been involved with. Does the reinsurance plan play into helping to reduce premiums from the folks that you were just citing as persons who may be subject to those mandates?
Sure, just go. Yes, so the reinsurance program applies to the individual market, so those people who are buying insurance on their own.
And then, Deputy Commissioner, as you review premiums in August, we get the preliminaries, in October, we get the finals as to what those are going to be. My experience in looking back at those is those premiums are the most expensive premiums for health insurance and also carry the highest deductibles. So I'm not going to put words in your mouth, but I'm going to ask you to maybe evaluate this statement that I'm about to make, and that is, when the premiums are already higher, we have mandates on, does it make it more affordable or less affordable for those folks who are in the individual market and probably have the biggest, greatest need because they're limited as to where they can buy insurance?
So Chair Driscoll, those are good questions to be asking. We look at rates, so the overall impact on costs. What people actually pay can really vary depending on where they live in the state and what sort of tax credits they're eligible for.
Okay, and for the benefit of the committee, I do watch the MNsure site and watch this and watch the numbers that come through the department. And in our gold, silver, and platinum, if you can find plans from different carriers in each of those metal levels, the premiums are $1,200 to $1,400 a month, with deductibles in the neighborhood of $5,000 to $8,000 to $10,000. And so when you add mandates into that individual market, you just add on top of that monthly premium, and you take away all the other coverage for someone if they can't afford the increasing base premium. They can't come in and say, I'll take the $1,400 minus the $200 that went in for the mandates this year, just keep me at $1,200. It's an all or nothing adventure, and that kind of has other social impacts if people don't have insurance as to how they get medical care and the problems that the hospitals have with charity care and some of those kinds of things. And some of that's maybe a little out of the scope of the committee, but Representative Elkins raised that question, and that got me to thinking about those items. So, Representative Elkins.
Yeah, and to continue on that line, Mr. Chair, we has also been observed that we're investing more in reinsurance than just about any other state, and I suspect that is true in large part because the premiums are so expensive that only sick people will sign up, and so we're in a severe adverse selection situation with the parts of the market, the small parts of the market that are covered by reinsurance.
Representative Elkins, I was thinking about that, but I wasn't going to go there. I'm glad you underscored that because that is something I was thinking, but I'm glad you brought it up. Our next member question comes from Representative Heintzman, followed by Representative Van Binsbergen. I'm sorry, I think we're done. Stand by. Thank you, Deputy Commissioner. Much appreciated. Representative Heintzman, and then Representative Van Binsbergen is next. Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And no question, but I do have a comment. We just yesterday in the Senate Commerce Committee were hearing additional bills that contain mandates in the subject area. I think it's especially prudent that Representative Perriman and others are on this bill, Representative Perriman as the chief author working on this issue, addressing this. As was mentioned earlier, I think by the deputy commissioner, might have been a member, 13 new mandates were passed in 23 and 24. And the costs sometimes are minimized, I think, as the bills are being presented. I think that was generally the case yesterday as I watched testimony. This would change all of that. We would be looking at a fiscal note in cases where mandates are being proposed, and I think it really would help to express to the public and to legislators also what is the actual cost of a proposed mandate. It's a very challenging subject area with lots of concern for folks in differing circumstances. But in the end, if you price somebody out of health insurance, you're creating an entirely different problem. This would get at that problem of affordability. So in the spirit of trying to address that, I think this is a really good bill. Thank you for bringing it forward, Representative Perriman.
Representative Van Binsbergen, followed by Representative Smith. Representative Van Binsbergen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I got a question and a comment. The first question is in regards, we're the second highest mandated state in the country. Do you know how many mandates we have on our policies? Is there any, you know that number?
I have to phone a friend here. They're discussing who has the right answer.
I see Mr. Cotter coming, so either A, he drew the short straw, or he has the answer. Mr. Cotter.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you for the question. Representative Van Binsberg, and I believe we're over at least 60, and I can get that exact number for the committee.
Thank you.
Representative Binsbergen.
My comment portion, I'm a small employer, and I employ people. I've been doing this for close to 30 years. And outside of payroll, my number one expense is health insurance. And we take this pretty seriously. Every year, when renewal time comes, we sit down and we farm out and we look to see how we can save money. And it is a huge strain on small businesses' budgets. It's a huge strain on moms and dads' budgets that are getting their insurance through the individual market. I am hearing from my constituents in my district, and to Representative Heintzman's comment about pricing people out of the insurance market, we're doing that with all these mandates that we have in place in this state. People cannot afford, small businesses, any business, they can't afford 20-30% increases every year. I'm very pleased to see your bill, Rep. Perryman, addressing this. I've only been here for a year, and all I've seen is new mandates and increased premiums happening. And so I just appreciate your work and look forward to partnering and walking alongside you as we try to tackle this problem in Minnesota. Thank you.
Representative Smith, followed by Representative Buck. Representative Smith.
Thank you. Excuse me. Thank you, Chair. I'm going to take a very different perspective on this issue, and I think it's important for the Commerce Committee to note, generally when we're talking about the insurance industry, insurance companies make their profit, or if they're a nonprofit, they make their revenue stream when they collect more in premiums than they are paying out in medical costs to those who are on their plans. The reason that the ACA was such a success is because the American people didn't want insurance companies to deny them coverage based on pre-existing conditions or conditions that they would need insurance for. The American people realized it was good for business to deny people medical care, but it was bad for humans. And when we're talking about medical coverage and what folks here like to call mandates, what we're saying is we're really cleaning up more of these denials that insurance companies can offer to care for people to make sure that they actually get the medical care that they already think they're paying for when they're on their plans. I think it's important to give voice to some of these, not just call them mandates, but what they are. I'm just going to use one example. Lower copays for breast cancer follow-up services, which might raise premiums by as little as 4 cents. If you are on one of these plans and you go to a breast cancer screening and something comes up on that scan and you have to go back for further scans, further tests, you want that to be covered. That's what we're saying here, if you're on one of these plans, those things can't be denied. That's a popular issue, and people who are on these plans want that to be true. And when we're talking about affordability with healthcare costs, we can't just talk about premiums, because what if you get that care, it's not covered by your health insurance? That's when you're getting bills of $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $80,000 that leads to medical bankruptcy, which, by the way, is the number one cause of bankruptcy in the United States of America. And we can talk about how small these pools are. I would say that means that is more reason that we should be adamant that they get care, because these are small employers or early retirees. They don't have huge PR departments or finance departments to go to bat with them when they talk to their medical insurance providers. So I think it's important not just to talk about the cost of premiums, but the cost of care, how that is rising. And this bill is going to have taxpayers fit the bill for that cost of care, not the insurance providers who are collecting the premiums that give them the revenue that is making them quite a lot of revenue, to be quite honest. The issue is not the legislature saying you have to provide care. It's not the people who want the care and who have trouble paying their premiums. It is the insurance companies in the middle that are reaping profits and revenue from people who need health care.
Representative Buck.
Thank you, Chair. I don't know who to ask this to, so I'll make a comment and then the question, and if someone has an answer, great. If not, I guess it's just a statement as well. When I was on tribal council, we were self-insured. We pay for our employees and the tribal members, or provide them for the tribal members and the employees. We mandated, didn't call it that, but we mandated at 1 year that they, all employees and all tribal members, get a physical, because we wanted to try to weed out any diseases or any issues before it got to a point where it was going to cost us more money. We paid for that. The tribe paid for that. We even provided it at our clinic on the reservation, so the employee and tribal member did not have to pay for that. It did end up saving some lives, so we were happy that we had done that. Now the question comes, and Andy kind of hit on it a little bit. I'm sorry, Representative Smith. I'm informal, my bad. Representative Smith touched on it a little bit, but are there other factors other than mandates that are costing insurers more money, such as the corporate greed, federal actions, especially right now from this current federal administration, and then just the bottom line profits that mean so much to companies? I don't know who to ask that to.
Yeah, I'm not sure, unless it could go to a lot of different people. If you had an idea of who you'd like us to call,
Commerce?
We certainly would be willing
okay.
to do that.
Commerce, then.
Okay. Deputy Commissioner, are you available? Yeah, we can bump you up to the head of the class if you want. And again, Deputy Commissioner, for your benefit, we'll ask Representative Buck to go ahead and rephrase the question so that you're, now that you are the chosen one, to know what you're going to answer the question about. Representative Buck.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for being here. Okay, I'm going to try my best to ask it in a sensible way. Other than the mandates that we're hearing that are making the cost go up more, are there other factors that are making it go up just as much, if not more, such as corporate greed, the current federal actions of this administration, and the bottom line profits that companies care about?
Deputy Commissioner.
Chair, Representative. So the biggest driver of what's driving costs is the cost of the care that's being provided. So medical care is just more expensive. So that's things like drugs are more expensive, the cost of paying for hospitals and doctors and nurses and all of the costs that go into providing care. Certainly we're seeing a lot of impacts of federal changes, including HR1 and other regulations that are impacting the market, the individual market right now, particularly with the expiration of the advanced premium tax credits.
Representative Buck, follow up? Okay. Commissioner Dreyer, just to follow up on Representative Buck's comment, she referenced the current administration. Did the current administration strike a deal to do some drug purchases and things that would help lower the cost of drugs? Are you aware of that action?
Chair Driscoll, I'm certainly aware of it. I'm not in a position to be able to comment on it, but my understanding is it doesn't directly impact the work that we're looking at for 2026 rates right
okay.
now.
Okay, thank you. Representative Davids.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Here we go again with the corporate greed and all those things, and big insurance companies make money. Well, if big insurance companies don't make money, they don't serve the members. You can't serve members if you're not around. So I want my insurance companies making lots of money so they have lots of reserves so they can pay my claims. I don't want to buy it appears that my friends on the other side of the aisle want to buy their insurance from Shifting Sands Mutual. That doesn't work. If you don't make money, you go bankrupt. That's the way it works. So these big companies with corporate greed, just, you know, stop that silliness. We have to encourage our companies to do well. We want them to do well so they can pay my claims when I get really old.
Are there other member questions at this time? Oh, Representative Finke.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to remind, you know, all nine people who are watching this live.
Representative Finke, we're going to put you in charge of trying to drive our numbers, then.
Start. I've gotten clipped in this committee already. I will say that I just want folks to know that, like, we're talking about something called mandates, but mandates are actually healthcare. And it's just important for me to, like, I know healthcare is expensive. We're talking about profits. We're talking about premiums. But what the people are saying the word mandate, so they don't have to say, we don't want you to have access to this care. Now, you could make the argument that that care should not be required, but it is health care, and it is care that people need. And it's just important to me, like, especially if we're going to say we, you know, members of the want health care, health insurance companies to make the most money possible, we also have to just say that the way that they do that is by not providing healthcare that people need. That is how they maximize profits. So there has to be an acknowledgement that what we're talking about is actual human people receiving healthcare or not. And how we decide to do that, I tend to be on the side of give everybody all of the healthcare so that people live well and long. But we need the word mandate to stand for what it means, which is care people need. Well, thank you, Chair.
You're welcome. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to comment on my friend Chair David's comment. I spent 17 years working in corporate health care for a Fortune 50 insurance company, and I just saw year over year that as they made more money, I made less. So the other thing I also noticed is the more care we denied, the bigger my bonuses were. And so I just want that on the record. Like, I've literally fed my kids with what felt like blood money for many years, because I knew that we were denying care to people who needed it, and that denial meant they had more money to give those of us who were helping to reduce network sizes, make make the fee reimbursements lower, all of that. For example, the company that I was working for in 2020, they had a 17% increase in their revenue, right? Because they weren't providing the care, like Representative Finke was just saying. And so I do think that the idea of corporate greed isn't just a talking point. It is a real lived experience. Like I said, I've almost 20 years in the industry and saw it firsthand. And I sat in meetings with executives who would flat out say, you know, we need to deny more care. That was an actual thing. So people should not think insurance companies are not exactly saying we want to deny care to make more money. It is absolutely happening. And so while people were stuck at home and couldn't even use the insurance they were paying for during COVID, this company just made money hand over fist. And we're talking billions and billions of dollars up there with, some of the wealthiest companies in the country. So I just agree with Representative Finke, and we can't deny that these things. I will also say, like, I remember when the ACA passed and the conversations we had, they were just, like, so upset, and they were just devastated. Oh, my gosh, all of these things that we have to do now. And it didn't change their profits that much. It didn't change how much money they were bringing in that much. But you would have thought that the whole company was burning down in flames, despite, again, being a Fortune 50 company. So I just wanted to point that out.
Any other member questions at this time? We'll go to Co-Chair Kegel for final wrap-up on, or as we start our final wrap-up, I should say. There we go.
Thank you.
That's almost my Binsberg here this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So one of my biggest questions is always, what is the largest driver of health care, of the increase in health care costs? And, you know, what we are seeing is people being divided into risk pools. And so we have our sickest, poorest people in this risk pool. And then we have, you know, this risk pool set up for teachers, and then we have this risk pool for us. And so there's all these different risk pools out there. And, you know, one of the best ways to make sure that we're keeping our costs down is to get everybody into one risk pool so that we're, you know, caring for each other through that risk pool. I also want to point out, too, that, you know, most of our public plans in our state are privately administered. And so these insurance companies are getting government contracts and then making money off of taxpayers that way. Not only that, but then they're, you know, denying health care, or a billing code mishap happens and you get a bill for $500 in the mail for something that was pre-authorized and you sat in your doctor's office and watched them do it. And then you have to sit on the phone for an hour on hold and get it all figured out. And, you know, what if you don't have the time to do that? We're also dealing with people right now who have been paying their premiums. I, you know, got home late last night and was sitting on my couch for the 30 minutes I get before I have to go to bed. And a friend from elementary school texted me. And her daughter is epileptic and has a very severe form of epilepsy. And they are on, they were on Health Partners. She gets care with her husband's work, and then they supplement with Health Partners to take care of their home health needs. Her daughter Hazel needs care, 2-to-1 care, 16 to 20 hours a day. Well, that premium that they've been paying to Health Partners, now Health Partners all of a sudden, you know, reread their policies and provisions and now will not provide that care to their family. And this is something that I was talking with families prior to session. It happened with Medica first, and now Health Partners is following suit to deny people who are the sickest and most vulnerable care, get them off of their books and put them onto public books. And so we're paying double for everybody. And this is absolutely ridiculous. The fact that we want, I mean, I want insurance companies to break even, because that means that they're spending as much as they possibly can on care for people. And I don't know how many yachts Lake Minnetonka can hold. And I also really disagree with Representative Smith's take on the ACA. I think it's horrible. I think it's just shoveling more money into private hands. And so I don't think that the system is sustainable. And I think that a lot of people who work in this system right now agree with me that it's just not a sustainable system, and something is going to have to radically shift. Otherwise, we're going to see a lot of people who are going to not have care and are going to be really, really sick on the streets. And so that's why I have always advocated for one risk pool of people that everybody gets access to the care they need when they need it. If you want luxury health care, you can pay for it, you know. But there has to be some basic decency where we are not treating basic human needs as profit-generating machines. And so I think that's just something that we all need to sit with and try and think about, and, you know, where do we want to invest our money? Is it in people's actual health care or investors' dividends? So thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate indulging me.
You're welcome, Co-Chair Cagle. As we wrap up, and I'll give Representative Perryman the final comment on here, I want to just make sure that we're clear on what bill is in front of us, because I think I see it from our discussions today that there are actually three different issues, all very important, but they're not all contained in this bill. There is another bill that deals with another component of this that's coming up here in just a few minutes. That bill, that 3388 that will be coming up shortly, deals with the individual market and the rising costs and the reinsurance program, which I noticed that was after last year, and I'm going to just kind of preface my comments a little bit to kind of maybe have some of those nine viewers that Representative Finke was talking about hang around for the second bill here, which is the one that I'm going to be working on.
What's that?
Somebody checked. It's 31.
Oh, well, she. Oh, my apologies. I gave Representative. No, I gave Representative Finke the job to drive our numbers, and we're like doubled or tripled our numbers already. So, but my point is, I was the only member in this committee last year that drug that reinsurance concept up the hill, with that boulder strapped to my back. And I was getting no support from the Senate. I was getting no support from anyone. But we finally did the right thing and help with that. And I also noticed that folks on both sides of the aisle were quick to go out with their press releases and go, we just renewed reinsurance. Isn't this the greatest thing? I want to say to all of you, you are welcome. Right? And I say that somewhat tongue-in-cheek, but I fought to get that. Could you imagine what premiums would be right now for people? Your phone calls would be a lot different right now than they are because you've got reinsurance. So that's addressing the general cost of this. The second is whether this committee and this legislature agrees to put additional mandates into insurance policies, which add layers of cost to the premium, to the insurance coverage. And then this bill, which is the third component, says if the state determines that something is a mandate and needs to be covered and is worthy of being included in a policy, then we as the state of Minnesota will pay for that because we think it has long-term benefit for Minnesotans, and we're doing that through the defrayal system, which is what this bill 400 addresses. And as was testified earlier, there are over 60-some mandates that are in our insurance policies right now that don't have any real defrayal on them. And as a result, the people who can least afford the policies are paying the highest premiums in that individual market. As our co-chair pointed out, a lot of these folks are the sick of the sickest. They don't have other sources. But yet we think that we're doing a noble thing by putting more mandates on or drawing back the reinsurance program. Again, I'm getting a little ahead of myself because that's the bill that's coming up. But this is a way for us to be able to help level that playing field for folks who we think are important concepts, insurance and mandates, to be able to help keep it affordable so we don't have other unintended consequences. Representative Perryman, I'm going to give you the final word.
Well, thank you, Chair O'Driscoll and Chair O'Cagle. I really appreciate the healthy, no pun intended, healthy conversation we had today. And that is why the bill is being laid over the second time, because we have these discussions, and I'm open to more discussions, and do it for the right reason. And I really appreciate, Chair O'Driscoll, what you have teed up for your own bill coming up, but for what the three buckets that are in front of us. This has been a kitchen table conversation, I think, with many families right now. And I just want to get in front of the curve. And I'm not saying all mandates are bad. Some of them have been very good. I am a cancer survivor, thanks to probably one of those mandates from 2018. But we need to keep speaking about it and have healthy conversations and, meet in the middle and help our businesses and our families afford insurance so that what I've heard at one time at a farmer door was, I can't afford it, I'm just not going to do it. Well, unfortunately, that will be, again, an expense to the state. So I really, really thank you very much for your time and expense. And one of those 31 people was my husband, just so you know, because he's watching. So he's 31. And let's keep driving those numbers. Maybe we can be the highest viewed committee on the circuit. Thank you very so much.
Well, Representative Perryman, I don't think we're going to get to the numbers that will award an Emmy Award for this committee by viewership, but we certainly can try. And so with that, the bill is laid over, and I'm going to pass the gavel to Chair Davids as I move to the testifying table to bring up and to discuss House File 3388.
See, I'm not that quick.
Welcome to your committee, Mr. Chairman. Representative O'Driscoll moves House File 3388. I see there is an amendment. Would you like to move the amendment to get the bill in the shape you would like?
Mr. Chair, I do, and I will move the A1 amendment to House File 3388 to get it in the shape that I would like to discuss this morning.
Any discussion on the A1 amendment, was it? Great. On the E1 amendment. Hearing or seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Two-year bill as amended, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members, again, at the risk of repeating myself, I will summarize. We have three buckets that we're looking at today. One is the basic cost of insurance, which is what this bill is going to address. The second is whether or not the legislature incorporates mandates into future coverage. And then third, that deferral that we just laid over in House File 400, things that affect and can make insurance more affordable. The bill 3388 is an outcropping from the work that we did last year and the work that has been done over the last several years. And for historical purposes, the current person who is in chair, Representative Davids, was the first author of the reinsurance program here in the state of Minnesota, I think probably, what, 10 years ago or thereabouts, as we started seeing a need to keep insurance affordable for folks. And that concept has actually been lauded bipartisanly by the Minnesota Congressional Delegation as an innovative way to be able to keep insurance affordable and to keep insurance available for those who, quite frankly, can least afford it because they don't have the benefit of an employer plan or other association plan that they can buy into in a larger group and receive reduced premiums because of the size of that pool. Some will say the sickest of the sick. I will say it's not just the sickest of the sick. As has been pointed out in testimony in a previous bill, sometimes it's early retirees. Sometimes it's other individuals who are in transition. Sometimes it's people who, because of their health condition, they're able to afford a private policy and pay the premiums or attempt to pay the premiums, but they don't have employment because their health condition is such that they're not able to have full or regular employment that would allow them the kind of health coverage that might be afforded through an employer-based program. So the bill last year did two things. Number one, it extended the reinsurance program in the state of Minnesota on a five-year waiver from the federal government. Commerce was directed to apply for a waiver. The waiver was granted again for the second time to the state of Minnesota to allow us to be able to have this innovative program called the reinsurance program. What we did was funded it two ways last time. One was through what's called the HCAF, which is the Healthcare Access Fund, and some people will call that the sick tax. It's where you go and recently I bought new eyeglasses and I had to pay a 2% tax. That money went into this fund, as well as other, if you will, health taxes that go into there. That fund has seen its last year of access out of the bill last year. We moved to a new model called an assessment model. And so what I'm bringing forward to us today in the base bill, 3388, was the continuation of a assessment process should we go forward with reinsurance. And I've also, with the A1 amendment, it directs the department to once again ask for a waiver so that we can continue considering the reinsurance program in the state of Minnesota. Notice that I said consider the reinsurance program in the state of Minnesota. The legislature is about to experience something that I don't know that happens on a regular basis, and I don't know if it's happened in this committee or in this area of jurisdiction ever. But in the commerce area, the four key principles that are in the House and the Senate, myself, Representative Kegel, Representative Dames, and Senator Dames and Senator Klein, all are either the leads or the chairs of the Commerce Committee are leading at the end of this session. Let me say that again. People who understand and have extensive knowledge in the insurance area are leaving the legislature at the end of this session. It means that new people will be assuming those roles, and that institutional knowledge, which is probably close to about 70 years of knowledge, plus or minus, maybe closer to 60, is walking out the door. What I'm attempting to do is to bring this bill forward so that the legislature in 2027 has options and tools on the table in which to address this issue when the current reinsurance program ends. That is the sole purpose of this bill. If we do not do this, it takes options away, which going back to the three buckets that we were talking about before, cost of individual premiums will go up substantially. Your phones will ring. There may be additional mandates that we don't know whether or not we'll take the defrayal bill. If there's not, that will cost and be drivers on that. And again, your calls, your interactions with constituents will be different than they are right now under the reinsurance program. So, Mr. Chair, that is the genesis behind it and the reason why we're bringing this forward, a little base history for some of the newer members to the committee who may not have had the benefit of last year's discussion or previous discussions in committee. Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Before we start with the witnesses, just to get a lay of the land here, is there anyone in the audience that's not on the list that would like to testify or get on the list? Would the department like to testify at all on this bill? Okay, so we'll go forward with the folks that are on the list here. Now, the first person is Dan Andreessen, Senior Director of Policy and Government Affairs, Minnesota Council of Health Plans. On deck is Ann New Brindley, Health Policy Director, Minnesota Business Partnership. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Dan Andreessen with the Minnesota Council of Health Plans. Minnesota's reinsurance program has been a resounding success since it began in 2018, and it's not a stretch to say that it saved the individual market this year. And we thank you for passing legislation to continue this program. This is a subsidy program for Minnesotans who buy insurance on their own because they don't have access to insurance through an employer or government program. The program is based off the former federal reinsurance program under the ACA to lower premiums by paying a portion of high-cost medical bills, a cost that otherwise would be built into premiums. The state uses an attachment point model, meaning the program only subsidizes 80% of enrollee claims between $50,000 and $250,000. All claims below that threshold or above it are paid entirely by a health plan. Eligible claims are submitted quarterly by health plans in the individual market to the Minnesota Comprehensive Health Association and the Department of Commerce. Once these claims are verified and the matching federal funds are received, the state makes payments to health plans 12 to 18 months after the health plan had paid the claim to the provider. Even though the payment is retrospective, since health plans know the subsidy is coming, they're able to account for this in their rates and lower premiums. These transactions are summarized in quarterly and annual reports posted publicly on the association's website by an independent actuarial firm. Reinsurance is one of the most audited programs in the state, and everything you need to know is in these reports. These reports show you how much is spent and how and where it is spent. It includes breakdowns on reinsurance payments by health plan, medical level, plan type, exchange status, claim spend, geographic rating area, and which chronic conditions are being subsidized. High medical costs for over 5,000 Minnesotans were subsidized in 2024, including people living with diabetes, asthma, heart conditions, rheumatoid arthritis, cancer, and more. And we hear a lot of misinformation about this program, that there's assertion that this program is a bailout for insurance companies. This subsidy is for patients who keep money in the pockets of your constituents that they otherwise be paying for premiums. The money passes through health plans because we are the ones processing and paying the medical claims. We are not holding on to any of that money for administrative purposes. Past analysis of the program concluded premiums had been 22 to 36% lower than they would have been without reinsurance. For this year, premiums were 47% lower with reinsurance, driven in due in large part because of the loss of the federal enhanced premium tax credits that ended at the end of last year. It sounds unlikely that these credits will be reinstated in this year or in future years, therefore making the continuance of reinsurance a necessity. Even though the program remains in effect through 2027, having certainty that this program will continue will bring stability to health plan rate setting processes. The council thanks Chair O'Driscoll for his leadership on this issue and asks for your support to continue this program. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Any questions for the witness, for members? Okay, thank you very much. Next, Ann New Brindley, and then we'll be going to Mr. The Stephen Rubis, Government Relations and Administration Health Plan Partnership of Minnesota. Ms. New Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, and members. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Ann New Brindley, and I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Business Partnership. We are an association representing Minnesota's largest employers, companies that employ one out of every six Minnesotans, and provide coverage, health insurance coverage, for their workers and families under ERISA. This means that our employees do not purchase insurance on the individual market and do not benefit directly from reinsurance. That said, the number one health policy priority for our membership is a stable healthcare ecosystem. With the loss of the advanced premium tax credits, the health insurance market is dealing with real disruption. Insurers have had to adjust quickly, people are being forced to make difficult decisions, and that kind of churn creates ripple effects throughout the entire healthcare system. Even though large employers operate their own health plans, we don't operate in isolation. When the broader market becomes unstable, it shows up everywhere in provider pricing, cost trends, and overall pressure on employer-sponsored coverage. At a time when the system is already absorbing federal policy shocks, this bill helps provide continuity and predictability at the state level. It reinforces a steady approach and helps ensure Minnesota is not adding more uncertainty on top of what employers and employees are already experiencing. From our perspective, this is about risk management and common sense. Employers are already navigating workforce shortages, inflation, and rising healthcare costs. Policies that help stabilize the system rather than disrupt it make it more likely employers can continue offering affordable, reliable coverage. And for those reasons, the Minnesota Business Partnership strongly supports House File 3388. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And thank you for your testimony. Questions of Ms. New Brindley. Okay, thank you very much for your testimony. Next, the Stephen Rubis and then Jonathan Cotter. Mr. Rubis, please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Stephen Rubis from Health Plan Partnership in Minnesota. Thank you to co-chairs O'Driscoll and Cagle and Commerce Committee members. I would like to testify on behalf of Health Plan Partnership in Minnesota to voice our support for the continued work in providing stabilization to the individual market through the reinsurance program. While HPPM members do not participate in the individual market at this time, we do recognize the tremendous pressure being experienced by many Minnesotans in the individual market, with premiums rising over 20% for 2026. Without reinsurance in place, that rate would have been much higher. Extending reinsurance now would provide some longer-term stability, which is desperately needed right now. While HPPM supports reinsurance, we'd also like to stress how the tax credit within the program prevents additional cost shifting onto Minnesotans. With $266 million in assessments on health plans to pay for reinsurance in the next biennium, these tax credits mean reinsurance assessments will not be passed on through higher premiums. Much like the debate regarding federal subsidies for the ACA over the past year, these credits result in lower premiums. HPPM would strongly encourage those credits remain in place should reinsurance assessments also remain. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rubis. Questions for Mr. Rubis? Thank you. Mr. Cotter.
Wasn't there a TV show about that?
Yeah. Please state your name and who represents for the record, please, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. For the record, Jonathan Cotter with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. And I just want to begin by thanking you for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 3388 today. Minnesota's reinsurance program was created in 2017 in response to a severe period of instability in the individual market. According to the Minnesota Department of Commerce's 2016 rate release, premiums in the individual market were projected to increase between 50 and 66.8%. Reinsurance was designed to stabilize that market and help bring premiums down. The individual health insurance market provides coverage for many Minnesotans who are self-employed entrepreneurs or early retirees. But it is also becoming an increasingly important coverage option for small employers and their employees. Many employers today help their workers purchase coverage in the individual market through defined contribution arrangements using health reimbursement arrangements or HRAs. In any given year, roughly 5% of our members already provide coverage this way, helping their employees purchase insurance through the individual market. Another 5% of employers who currently offer group coverage tell us that they may consider shifting to this approach if rising healthcare costs make traditional coverage harder to sustain. And more than 20% of employers who do not currently offer coverage say that they are exploring these arrangements to help their employees purchase insurance. These trends underscore the importance of maintaining a stable, affordable individual market in Minnesota. Reinsurance helps provide that stability by covering a portion of very high cost claims from real people in this market. Reinsurance payments go directly towards covering high cost claims. Quarterly program audits and reporting consistently show that the funds are being used to cover the costs of care for Minnesotans facing serious conditions like diabetes, heart and respiratory disease, and cancer. And the results are clear. The Department of Commerce has historically estimated that the program reduces premiums by about 20% compared to what they would have otherwise been without the reinsurance program. More recently, the department indicated that by extending the program last session, that prevented a staggering 47% increase in the individual market. Today, Minnesota has one of the lowest individual market premiums in the country. According to the Kaiser Family Foundation, Minnesota ranks third lowest in average benchmark premiums in the ACA marketplace. All of this reflects bipartisan work over nearly a decade to stabilize this important market. That said, we recognize the legislature made a major change in the program in 2025 by shifting from a traditional funding source to an assessment and credit model applied to group health carriers, not all of which participate directly in the individual market. We recognize that there are still some concerns on how that mechanism will operate. House File 3388 ensures the state retains the authority needed to support this program going forward. We respectfully ask legislators to support House File 3388 and continue supporting a policy that has helped stabilize the individual market and keep premiums lower for Minnesotans. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cotter. Any questions for Mr. Cotter? Okay, thank you very much. Questions in general from members, or I will go to Chair Representative Dotseth.
Just a brief question. Chair O'Driscoll, you had a testifier that kind of covered this a little bit about the importance of extending this program. Can you kind of briefly discuss the importance of extending this through 2032 that will maximize available federal funding on the 1032 waiver?
Chair O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Dotseth. The waiver that we're looking for is to allow us the ability to be able to have this creative and innovative way that the state of Minnesota had brought forward about 10 years ago. And so without the waiver, we're no longer able to offer that exception under the ACA. And so it's mission critical if the legislature doesn't have a brand new shiny mechanism in which to be able to replace this, that devastation will occur if that program ends abruptly and premiums go up anywhere, as was stated by Mr. Andreessen, anywhere from 20 to 36% increases in premiums, because that was what the savings were. If you had a premium that was, just doing easy math, $1,000 a month, and you had a 36% increase, that means you have to come up with $360 a month more, about $4,400, $4,500 a year more, just insurance premiums to keep the same coverage that you had before without this reinsurance program. Again, for many of these people who avail themselves of the plan, they are from individuals who do not have the benefit of a employer or a pooled plan. They do not have the benefit of any other subsidy or any other kind of participation by another group other than they pay for it out of their pocket and receive the nominal buy-down that we have from the reinsurance program. So what does that look like? More Minnesotans don't have insurance. More Minnesotans present themselves at our emergency rooms, which is the highest cost of care, and is also the highest driver of uncompensated care, which means that the hospitals and the doctors and the clinics go unpaid, which destabilizes not only the insurance industry,
that helps to cover the costs of that care. It also destabilizes the viability of the providers of that care because they're showing more red on their books. And having been a member of this committee for almost my entire legislative career, I know that we are concerned about the viability of not only some insurance companies, but the viability of some of the providers. We had a while back a very intense committee hearing about 3 years ago about what's to happen with one of the major providers that was involved, the University of Minnesota, exiting the market and a private entity taking it, that organization has had some very major issues. Since we last met and dealt with this issue, Representative Dotseth, one of the carriers that is in the individual market that you would have been able to find on the exchange is no longer there because they closed shop and decertified and moved out of the state of Minnesota and basically closed their books, right, through a shutdown and basically just coming out of the market. Who's next? Who's next? Which is the next one that's going to be filing to leave? So it's either a slow death or a fast death. That's why this is here, to be able to help us, to give us time and options to be able to look at what we can do in the future to be able to help. I won't be here to make that decision. I'm trying to put tools on the table for you folks to be able to have some options, because the last thing I would like you to do and have see happen is it is May 20th next year and you're sitting around the table going, gosh, I wish we would have had the reinsurance option. That would have been good. And then that year, y'all get to write and say, I'm the one who's responsible for your 20% increase in premiums because we didn't have the reinsurance program. All I'm asking for is to give you the tool, and you can decide if you want that tool or not. I won't be here, as I said, neither will the other ranking members that deal with us in both chambers or the chairs. It's going to be your decision about the tools you want for yourself in the future. I don't know if I necessarily answered your question, Representative Dotseth, but...
Thank you for your brief answer.
And Chair O'Driscoll, my press release is ready to go as soon as this gets going. So, okay, with that, Chair Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Oh, Representative Elkins, do you have a question?
Oh, yeah, if you wrap it up. Representative Elkins.
I just wanted to observe that, you know, after listening to all the discussions and hearings we had last year on this topic, I still don't understand how the insurers self-assessing themselves for this program works. It just still feels to me like we're moving money from the left pocket to the right pocket. And I would love it if I could understand how this really works.
Chair O'Driscoll.
Representative Elkins, we'll get you some folks offline to have that conversation because you may have a number of follow-up questions on that, but I think it's a fair question, and I think that you deserve an understanding of that if you're going to be a decision maker if we bring this to a vote as to how important this is and what tools might be available. So I would encourage us to, for yourself and for other members who are not sure about how that process works, to we'll get you in contact and we'll get you some time on your calendar with folks. Absolutely.
Representative Elkins.
Thank you.
And with that, I'm going to invite Chair those Driscoll. Who testified and others who have a desire on this to make sure that you're paying attention to members who want to learn more, because this is going to help all of us to get to a better solution.
Thank you, Chair Driscoll. Any other comments? Representative Smith.
I'll be quick because we've had good discussions, Chair, about reinsurance. I don't have to talk about the program and my thoughts on it as a whole. I simply want to say you were describing your Sisyphean task of putting the boulder up the hill. One of the things I do appreciate last session that we did is moving from a general fund cost for this program to the assessment model in the MCHA. So I appreciate that. I think if we're going to have this program, which I think is an if that we should have debate on, this is the better way to fund it.
Thank you, Representative Smith. To wrap up, Representative Cagle, or Chair Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So from my understanding, it's an assessment the insurance companies pay, and then they get a tax refund on that assessment. Is that correct?
Chair O'Driscoll.
Yeah, Representative Cagle, this is what's known as the North Dakota model. And so what happens is there's an assessment that goes to the plans, and it's based on whether they are or not participants in the individual or market that would be affected by the premium reduction. And then what they do is they pay an assessment, and then there's a tax credit that goes back on tax liability that they would owe the state of Minnesota on that. That's the general high level of how it works. If there is, again, further detail that you'd like to know, we'll get some of the folks who are more intimately involved in that and pay that to kind of walk through some scenarios or some what-ifs with you if you're interested.
Chair Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the way I understand it, it's kind of like a reimbursement program.
Yeah, I mean,
Chair O'Driscoll.
Thank you. Yes, it's they pay and then it comes back as a tax credit. No different than we would offer a tax credit on our individual tax returns or something that we did or we paid for it, and then we're getting a tax credit for that behavior. That's correct.
Okay.
Chair Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So taxpayers are footing the bill for this. And so, again, we're being asked as taxpayers to pay for the defrayal costs, pay for reinsurance. We want to kick all the vulnerable people off of private insurance and get them into public plans. The health insurance companies are administrating public plans. One question I do have is the cuts from the feds. Hopefully, this didn't draw on my face. The cuts from the feds. How long can, is there any thought on how long we're able to make up for those cuts to the ACA market? I don't know if the state is going to be able to sustain that, covering those cuts that we're going to now have to backfill.
Chair O'Driscoll.
We actually in the state of Minnesota, thank you, Mr. Chair, had the reinsurance program, and there were some nominal federal tax credits. During the pandemic, those tax credits premium credits that were as a result of advanced tax credits were awarded through the Biden administration and scheduled to expire at the end of 2025, which they did do. So yes, there's going to be an increase in premiums because the federal tax credits are there, and that's because the enhancement that was put in that plan has expired. Mm-hmm. And we're going to go back to either no subsidy or perhaps back to the nominal subsidies that we had seen prior to COVID. So this plan has been in existence pretty much paralleling all of those events of the last 10 years. And if I might, to the comment, Co-Chair Cagle, that we're using taxpayer money on this, I think it's taxpayer money fill in the blank. What are you going to spend it on? Is it going to be to try to stabilize this market? Is it to be to transfer more money to hospitals because of uncompensated care? Is it going to be to subsidize prescriptions, whatever the case may be? I think that's what you're seeing. It's not a question of this program is the only program that would require public money to be successful. We're going to be asked to pay for it some way, shape, or form. It's just a matter of where along the continuum we're going to be. Is it up front with the premiums? Is it at the time that they don't have money because they don't have coverage? Most expensive care through the hospital emergency room care. Mm-hmm. And then follow up at the clinics who are all charged with writing this off. I very much do not want to destabilize what we do have left as a market because it's starting to show cracks already in the state of Minnesota.
Chair Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chair O'Driscoll. I totally agree. And the one thing that I want to remind people is, though, that insurance isn't healthcare. Insurance is administrative. And so, there's a better way of doing it. And I think every other country in the world has figured it out. I am a single-payer supporter. I think healthcare is a basic human right. I don't think people should be profiting off of basic human needs. And again, it's just, yes, more taxpayer dollars going into a system that's unsustainable and broken. And so we really do have to do something drastic. I do understand the situation we're in, and we want to make sure that we're keeping premiums affordable for Minnesotans. And so I think, we need to do something. And it's just getting really unaffordable for every Minnesotan out there. And, you know, I think Chair O'Driscoll is right that right now by doing this reinsurance, we're just kind of slowing down the death of the system. And so, you know, I hope we get some creative minds in here because, like you said, we're gone. So we need brave people to step up and really, you know, address this problem head on. And we're not going to be able to do it this year. So good luck, guys. Thank you.
Thank you, I think. Yeah. But like many have said, if you think health care insurance is expensive now, wait till it's free. Okay, if you could wrap it up, please, on 3388 as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and I appreciate your willingness to support the A1 amendment. Again, as I've mentioned before, and just underscored by Representative Cagle, we will be gone. We're trying to leave you with our experience and our connection to these issues with some tools that the legislature and this committee specifically can use in the future, and this is the time to be able to do that because your waiver expires in 2027. You have a new legislative session in 2027, which is a budgeting session, and this is a great time to be able to put those tools in place for folks in Minnesota. Whether it gets used or not, that is completely up to the new legislature to make that decision. We're simply wanting to make the tool available so that you can be weighed in the decision-making process. With that, Mr. Chair, I appreciate the time and the committee's discussion and our testifiers on the matter before the committee today.
So Chair O'Driscoll renews his motion that House File 3388 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill.
And Mr. Chair, there is no other business, but typically what we do is we, as co-chairs, defer to one another at the end of the meeting here to see if there's anything that we want to talk about that's coming up in the next week. So maybe we can hear from Representative Cagle since she will have the gavel on Tuesday.
Absolutely. Chair Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We are... Okay, yeah, we might have some agency bills up. So the calendar is fluid at the moment, but we will get it posted as soon as possible.
Thank you so much, Chair Cagle. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, that cliffhanger may increase our viewership. I'm not sure.
My goal is to hit 50 yet this year. Okay, so anything else for the good of the order? Members, thanks for your work today. We are adjourned.